It's the Burt Cohen Show. And it goes on in very bizarre ways, very unexpected ways. This is really through the looking glass kind of stuff. I remember in the 50s when it was the Soviet Union, the evil Soviet Union, that was the surveillance state that told its people lies and was obsessed with secrecy, not the U.S. Well, now Edward Snowden is in Moscow. Putin is not a nice guy, let's face it, but he is, he's got some degree of freedom now, and the NSA's tale goes on and on and on, and it does seem that there's a lot more to it than we have been told. Manning opened up the door, got the information, passed it on to Snowden. Apparently there were an awful lot of people who may have had access to this information. And the Obama administration has continued to spin, saying, oh, it's just metadata, huge data. It's too big, and they can't really do any actual spying, any domestic surveillance. But apparently, that may not be true. It may be, as our guest to say, that said that it may have been unmasked, the metadata explanation is unmasked as a meta lie. Our guest today is Steven Rosenfeld, who covers democracy issues for Alternate and is the author of Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting, which was put out by Alternate Books in 2008. And in today's New York Times, there's a big front page article about this subject, and it says in part, officials admit that the surveillance is much broader. It searches Americans' communications without warrants for just mentions of individuals under surveillance, whether or not the person being spied on has any direct contact. What the heck is going on here? The NSA spin, Stephen, was that its data tools would only be used for overseas targets and that the metadata explanation, as you say, is a mega lie. What would be the motivation for the lie? Why would Obama do this in light of his famous pledge for greater transparency in the Obama administration?
Well, hi. I think that the answer to this is that it actually transcends, you know, any single presidency. There is a national security state that has emerged. Those are not my words. Those are the words of two of the best investigative reporters that the Washington Post has ever had, Dana Priest and William Arkin. William Arkin lives in Vermont now and is a former retired security officer. And what it's all about is that, you know, just like the Pentagon and its weapons programs have their momentum that transcends, you know, sessions of Congress and who sits on the different oversight committees. Since 9/11, there's been this explosion in the, you know, under the guise of fighting the war on terror that has grown from, grown to include these NSA disclosures, the disclosures about the NSA spying. And, you know, and so you ask the question, well, what, you know, what about Obama? It's not just him. In some ways, what's so striking to me about this, and I've really gone into, you know, the people who have written about this, the books that are out there, and they are out there, is that nobody can control this, this hunger for data. And it's a battlefield mindset where every police department at the lowest levels has to be outfitted like military SWAT teams. No tools are ever sufficient because a threat, you can never do enough. And And it's kind of inflicted, you know, it's inflicted sort of the way we do policing, the way we have foreign policy, and the way that, you know, the government can, you know, just scoop up whatever it can find, and always justifiably, always secret, and now, you know, outside, you know, any kind of constitutional review. And that's what I think is really going on. And I really question, you know, who can stop this? Because it's almost as if it's, you know, what we see in the papers, we see trickles. Oh, there's this program. Oh, there's that program. Oh, and we can go through the lies. You know, the NSA has been caught, NSA, Dianne Feinstein, you know, the senator from California, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Obama, they've all been unmasked, telling untruths about, oh, it's limited. Oh, it's transparent. Oh, we're not looking at this. Oh, we're not looking at that. All that's not true. But nobody is stepping back and saying in totality, hey, what's going on here? You know, what about the Fourth Amendment? What about search and seizure? You know, what about evidence? What about compiling government dossiers? What about privacy? And it's very resonant on just, you know, it's not just the left, you know, the right
certainly
cares about this stuff too. You know,
yes.
What about judicial process?
And what about national security? You know, a lot of people say, well, this is the 21st century. We need to protect ourselves from the bad guys. Look, 3,000 people were killed on September 11, 2001. Don't we need tools like this? Aren't people like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden stabbing America in the back by releasing this information? What's your reaction to that? Isn't that a higher priority? And don't these, you know, Fourth Amendment rights, oh, you know, come on, people, we got to get used to it here. This is a new age. We have to take serious steps to protect ourselves. How does that?
Well, you know, that's what people say, of course. And look, you can probably tell from my voice. I may live in California, but I grew up in New York. And my parents, they were witnesses, if not victims, in 9/11 too. I won't kind of. Yeah, they lived across in Hoboken. They saw people jumping off the World Trade Center, and my mother had a stroke the next day. You know, and
my God.
You know, but the thing is, you know, when you step back from this, you have to sort of ask the question. You know, where's the balance here? You know, a lot of people say, oh, we just have to live with this. This is the new normal.
Right.
Just like you have to live with kids, you know, doing like, you know, nonstop texting and the fact that there's, you know, privacy is shrinking everywhere.
Right.
So get used to it. But, you know, then you have people like Leahy,
right,
you know, who's, you know, I mean, he was a prosecutor. He's not always, you know, a criticism of that kind of power. Basically, you know, senator leading the Judiciary Committee saying,
right,
where's the evidence that this stuff is really working?
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. I think historically, is the world a more dangerous place now than it was, you know, during, you know, the mid-20th century, you know, around World War II? You know, are there more foreign wars going on? Are we calling everything that essentially is like a local police activity or something, you know, a terrorist crime?
Right.
I mean, look, the airport burned in Kenya yesterday on the anniversary of a terrorist bombing. Everybody frames it as a terrorist attack. I mean, maybe, you know, it's a local labor dispute. You know, and this is the thing that I think, you know, is sort of indicative of the age we're in. You know, we've been terrorized to think that everything is wrong is terror.
Right. And that's giving huge success to the genuine terrorists. Absolutely tremendous success, more success than they could have possibly dreamed. If we are, in fact, terrorized by it and are willing to give up our rights and our definition and identity as Americans, then they have won big time. And you mentioned Patrick Leahy, U.S. Senator, Democrat from Vermont. He accused the Obama administration of overstating the success of the domestic call log program. He said he had been shown a classified list of so-called terrorist events detected through surveillance. And according to Senator Leahy, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, it did not show that dozens or even several terrorist plots had been thwarted by the domestic program. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, you know, people can go and go on Amazon and buy a used copy of this book that Dana Priest and William Arkin wrote. They did this series called Top Secret America, for the Washington Post. It was in 2010. This is before Snowden, before all this NSA stuff. And then they have a book that's same title, Top Secret America, The Rise of the New American Security State. You can get it for like $3 used on Amazon, you know. And what it talks about is that after 9/11, the Congress with the White House was completely panicked and basically gave multi-billion dollar blank checks to the NSA, the CIA, and they just created this literally like a tsunami, you know, of secret, I mean by secret, classified, all kinds of, you know, anti-terror and spying programs. And what they write about they basically say that there are close to a million people now who are working with top secret clearances in that industry. Snowden was one of those people. And it's so big that nobody has a sense of what's really going on, because nobody can hold all the details. So there's really no oversight. No one's really in control. And then you see these stories like the ones you talked about at the top of your show. Like the New York Times reports, this was earlier this week, that agencies are pissed at the NSA, other government agencies like the Drug Enforcement Agency and Immigration and Patents and Trademark, that they can't access the NSA data for their own enforcement purposes. And so what you've got here is something that's really grown out of control. And in the last couple of years, what's happened is the NSA, which is, you know, they've basically decided that they have to build their versions of the world's biggest supercomputers, you know, that out-Google Google. And this is what all these disclosures are about. And, you know, so you have competing government and military agencies that are just operating outside of any kind of, they disregard national and international legal lines. They can look for whatever they want. You know, they always ask for permission after the fact if they ask for it at all.
Right.
You know, and this is the world we're living in, and there's no effective congressional oversight. I mean, that's the bottom line here. You know, all the oversight is in secret. It's behind closed doors. And whenever we see a vote, there's never a vote to stop anything.
And Stephen Rosenfeld, wrote about something called X key score. And before I get to that, that's very, very interesting. You know, some people are concerned that Manning and Snowden had this special access and gave away what would otherwise be secret to the world. I'm getting the impression that, you know, a lot of the world can fairly easily get access to the information dug up by this spying system. And this spying system, you know, is to allegedly to track down terrorists. Who knows what it's really for?
Well, when you say the rest of the world, you know, we got to there's been a long history going back to the 60s, even 1960s, where the CIA has told Congress, no, we don't spy on Americans. What they do, though, is they basically have the British do it for us, or the Canadian agencies do it for us, or the Australians do it for us. And, you know, so there is, or some other, you know, Europeans. And basically, you know, all this stuff is sort of shared. And so when you say the rest of the world can have access to this stuff, you know, Bradley Manning's, you know, just did a giant document dump. He had access to hundreds of thousands of documents.
Right.
And he didn't look at them one by one. He didn't think about who might be exposed or who might be named.
Well, he says,
you know, that's what, besides the fact that he did it, that's what drove the State Department crazy, because in a lot of those cables, you know, there were ambassadors saying bad things about this leader and that leader and things like that. Snowden was much more selective. Snowden basically, in a very sort of metered way, you know, let these different documents out. That's first said the FISA court, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, Yes, it did order the phone companies to turn over, you know, all of their records. So they call that metadata.
Right.
And then it kind of got a little bit deeper. He thought, and you know, then there were other disclosures, including this thing that, you know, last week, that actually was the training manual. It's a series of slides. You can go online, the New York Times has a link on their website, and go to 20 slides, and it tells you, as if you're, you know, you're trying to download the latest version of Excel on your computer, you know, open this and ask for that. And you could target emails, and you could target attachments. You can go into this stuff, and you could look and you know, this is great, I suppose, for fighting terrorism overseas, but it's also, you know, used domestically.
Right.
And this is what is really creepy, because what people don't, you know, think about being pulled over by a police officer for doing something. The officer is looking for tickets, and you did nothing wrong, and you've got to put up with this stuff. Well, you know, magnify that by a million when you think about the power. You know, people as individuals really underestimate and have very little ability to stop the power of the state from, you know, stepping into their lives. And that's what this is about.
And you were saying before we went on the air about, you know, when this stuff is out there, something like the, you know, the urge to get access to it, you know, the idea of it has been suggested that people fighting regular domestic crime, that there's going to be a demand for access to this stuff. It's not about foreign terrorists. It's about, you know, virtually anything. You know, can it be accurately said that when far too much information gets classified, then nothing is really classified? Is that part of the problem here? It's just too much, and it's, you know, never mind Manning and Snowden, the fact that so much of this stuff exists and so many people have access to it. What does that say about classified information and about secrets?
Well, you know, I just think that something really fundamental has shifted in the last decade. And, you know, we're living in an era where, you know, privacy is vanishing. So, for example, you know, unless you're living in the woods and, you know, you don't have a telephone and you don't have, you know, a computer, you know, link up or something like that, I mean, you know, your finance records, your emails, your personal health information, you know, your loans, you know, your credit reports, you know, the content of your, you know, your web searches, you know, what you look for, it's not just all traceable. It's traced by the private sector to sell you all kinds of stuff, but it's also held in these gigantic digital, you know, data warehouses by the government just in case they want to take a closer look, and it never goes away. And, you know, and this is, you know, we're told that this is the new normal.
Right.
But, you know, the difference between, you know, Google and Facebook, you know, knowing that this is what you searched for last time you went on eBay, so that different, like, you know, display ads pop up, you know, on the right-hand margins,
right,
because they know that you're interested,
sure,
in, like, taking a vacation here or buying something there, is not the same, you know, as, you know, as, you know, police authorities, you know, compiling dossiers.
Right.
You know, and that's a really big difference. And if you look at, you know, the New York Times reports about the turf battles over this data. This was, you know, so on Sunday, you know, the front page, right-hand column. What they're saying is the intelligence community has been agitated in recent years because they're getting pressured by other government agencies for not sharing enough.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, then we have stories like the one today that you point to that they're still sharing certainly enough, you know, to be used in, you know, all kinds of other programs. I mean, you know, so, and every day we see another little incident, you know, example of this. So,
yeah,
so Reuters this week says, oh yeah, now the DEA is taking some of this NSA stuff and they're telling its agents how to fabricate other evidence trails so it doesn't look like they're getting it from the NSA.
Oh.
That's Reuters. That's this week.
My goodness.
So when you step back from these like little, not little, but these like singular examples,
right?
What
yep.
you've got is a system that's, I mean, I defy anyone to say that it's in control.
Yeah, and that
close to a million people working, you know, all across the country with classified clearances. You know, the best thing you can do to get a job these days is to have a classified clearance and then go to a job fair outside of Washington.
It's sort of amusing. But, you know, I find it interesting, the Reuters report that you referred to, I think they also said that there's something called the Special Operations Division within the NSA that investigates common criminal charges. And if the NSA is investigating common criminal charges, we need right now data in prosecuting crime. It has to be obtained legally. Doesn't this indicate that there can be illegally obtained data in violation of the Fourth Amendment and that can blow such investigations out of the water because it was obtained illegally?
Well, you know, the whole judicial process of, you know, when you go through the Bill of Rights, you have this notion, a series of constitutional amendments that require, you know, that require search warrants. They ban, you know, illegal search and seizure. They require you to be, you know, charged with a crime, you know, by a court, signed by a judge, and then there's innocent until proven guilty. And, you know, and all that stuff is completely turned upside down by this brave new world of, you know, digital data mining. And the fact is that federal prosecutors settle something like 90, I'm not making this number up because I actually wrote a report on this, they settle 97% of all cases, because who can fight the federal government? They can all, if they want to charge you with something, they will, you know, there are so many statutes, they will find a crime. Most people don't have the resources. You will cave. And, you know, and this is trickling down, you know, more, you know, to some of these, to local police as well.
Yeah. And the militarization of local police is a little bit scary. Some of the military tanks that small local police forces are getting under Homeland Security grants. We're talking to Stephen Rosenfeld, who covers democracy issues for Alternate and is the author of Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting, Alternate Books, 2008. One of the things you wrote about is something called X Key Score. What is X Key Score? That I was fascinated to look into that. There's so many different aspects of that, and we can talk about what it is and how significant X Key Score is.
Well, you know, X Key Score is a software program that that Edward Snowden basically, he disclosed, and he used it when he was an NSA analyst. And what he did was he gave the UK Guardian and then the New York Times posted it as well, a copy of the user manual. And so you go through a series of 20 different screenshots, and what it enables you to do is to drill down and identify and go through people's emails, look for different links, look for different attachments, look for different documents, and search through them and look at them. And so when the NSA's top brass tell Congress we're not searching emails, and Obama says we're not doing that, that's not true. It's not just that it's not true, but it's just, well, here is how it's actually done. And people can go online and take a look at this for themselves. And it's not that hard to figure out. Now, in the you know, PDF that he shared, you know, the 20-something screenshots, most of the examples in it that are used talk about, you know, something in Iraq or something in Iran or something overseas. But there's no differentiating that there's no way that when you do a search, it stops at a nation's border. And that's what's kind of come out in some of the more recent reports, like even the New York Times today, where this much broader sifting of data in email messages absolutely, you know, grabs, you know, stuff that, you know, that's just being sent out by, you know, by Americans very, you know, here innocently. And there's just, you know, there's just no differentiation. And what you're left with is this giant, oh, just trust us. You know, if you're a good guy, you've got nothing to worry about. Well, you know, this is so big and this is so clumsy, you know, that, you know, mistakes get made.
Yeah, it does look incredibly clumsy. It sort of seems like the government is really, I mean, they find themselves, like I do, and suddenly we're in the internet age. They don't know how to protect their secrets. They don't know what to do. It seems like much of what is stamped secret today is really widely available on the internet. And this thing that I access, you pointed me to, this X key score, this 32-page thing that you can get on your internet. It's just, it's amazing. It's how, you know, Obama says the NSA megadata doesn't allow easy access to smaller data, like the content of phone calls. X key score can be, it shows on this display, can be configured to go shallow if the data rate is too high. What does that mean, Stephen?
Well, okay. The thing about, you know, anybody who's like deals with a big pile of stuff on their desk knows that just because you have a lot of papers doesn't mean you have the time to sort it all out.
Sure.
So you magnify that by, you know, a trillion.
Right.
And this is, in a sense, what the NSA's, the intelligence agency's dilemma is. You know, they figured out how to grab all the stuff. But then the question is, okay, how do they find the needle in the haystack or the mountain? It's not even a haystack, it's a mountain. So, you know, it's not that hard to understand. This go deep versus go shallow stuff is basically what any smart investigator does is they try to look for very specific clues. Well, in a digital world, in an information culture, you know, that's, you know, you look for website addresses, you look for tags, you look for names, you look for things that are very specific, and you have very, very powerful search tools. You know, things that, you know, were just inconceivable even 5 years ago because the power of computing has grown so vast.
And
that's what it is.
There was, I just thought in reading through this stuff, it was pretty, the lack of specificity is jaw-dropping, really. And I just want to find someone whose language, this is an example, someone whose language may be out of place for the region they are in, someone searching the web, this is from the language of X key score. They can look into, quote, someone searching the web for suspicious stuff. Now, that's legal language. They can investigate and pinpoint and look at the emails and the specific data of, quote, someone searching the web for suspicious stuff. That is amazing. I mean, what the heck is suspicious stuff? Who's deciding this? And what kind of language is that?
Let's talk about this for a second, because here's the thing that is so striking about this. It's not just this one program. You know, before, you know, 3 years before this stuff broke, Dana Priest and William Arkin wrote, you know, in their book, Top
right.
Secret America,
right.
how the military created this Northern Command called NORTHCOM, and what they're based in Colorado. And what they have is they have their own version of basically the Google Street, you know, photographs, where they can, you know, basically every, you know, the military, they have photos of every house in America. You know, just in case they have to have an operation there, they've got it nailed down. The departments, the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have other biometric databases. It's not just fingerprints. They have lists of people. They said there are hundreds of thousands of people who have been reported to local police who end up in FBI and DHS databases because they've done something like they pulled over their car while driving past, you know, near a bridge or a pretty waterfall to take a picture, and somebody thinks it looks suspicious, like they're out there to, you know, like they're casing the joint before they, you know, enact some crime. And they write about that there are hundreds of thousands of people across the country whose names are in these databases that would never know it. And then we come to what you're talking about here with, you know, what we've learned, you know, in this X key score. And you can just go through it. And, you know, and basically right. You can, you know, what you can do is you can find phone numbers. You can find email addresses. You can take logins. You can take passwords. You can take user activity. And you could, you know, you create these queries. And then, you know, this is a smart program. You know, if it thinks something's an email address, it will use it. It'll look at the IP numbers. And it just goes on and on and on. And all of this is, you know, who says what's suspicious? Well, suspicious is in the eye of the beholder, right. You know. But it's not just one program. You know, it's this culture that has emerged since 9/11. And it's not, you know, ask your listeners. Is anybody hear about congressional oversight saying, hey, wait a minute? It's not there.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And we talked last week, I believe it was, about the Amash Amendment, which very nearly passed, which had the support of people, liberals and right-wingers and genuine conservatives. But it almost passed. You had the party insiders, the party line folks who would toe the line on both sides. Certainly Nancy Pelosi was against it, and Obama was very much against it. But the tide really is turning. There does seem to be unstoppable momentum. Why? Because people in America have this basic sense of what's right and wrong and our freedoms. And I thought it was fascinating, Steve, that one intelligence official recently said, quote, terrorists have assumed for years that we collect this stuff, unquote. The agency claimed its surveillance of the Internet is not, quote, arbitrary and unconstrained. And you know, so if this is stuff to fight terrorists, and yet they've assumed that we've had access to all this stuff, how effective can it possibly be against, people who really want to attack America and kill more Americans?
Well, we just don't know. You know, obviously, you know, I'll tell you, I would suspect that there's, you know, the truth always lies in the middle, right? So I'm sure it's effective in some cases. But in other cases, you know, but what, this goes back to, you know, that list you were talking about that Leahy was shown.
Right.
Does it justify untold billions and a whole, like, you know, change in our, like, you know, sort of, you know, national, you know, security and local policing mindset, you know, to find, I always look at, like, proportionality. How many people are really, you know, what's the scale?
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure it stops some things, but, I mean, my gosh, you know, okay, I know this may not sound very popular, but look at the armada that piled into Boston after the Boston Marathon bombing. And the cops didn't find, you know, the one brother who survived. A neighbor, you know, the guy who had the boat, who's, you know, whose backyard he was right. hiding in, found
right.
him.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, it was as if every SWAT team, you know, in all
the world.
Of the
world. Yeah. So, what, you know, if this NSA, you know, huge system, which is accessible to so many people and is so vast, if it's, is there another purpose for it, for you know, tracking everybody and everything, you know, what could its purpose be if it's not to fight terrorism? And does this have something to do with what is talked about on the X key score, the federated query system?
Well, you know, I that's a really great question.
I don't really
know the answer to it, because, you know, most of the reporting, of course, that well, not just that I have done, but others have done, have been sort of focusing on, well, what is the government doing and what are the civil liberties implications and what are the constitutional law implications? But, you know, it's a great question. What else could it be used for?
Now, what might be the genuine purpose of the surveillance system?
Well, you know, it's, it's a great question. You know, we know what the private sector does with all this kind of information.
The traffic sector?
They market us to death.
True.
You know, but what government would do with all of it is a different question. What do you think?
It's a good question. I noticed that writing again in the New York Times, they've gotten a lot of references here today, that David Sanger says secrecy and security are often not synonymous, that there's this, you know, secrecy, but it's not so secret. As you said, you know, probably who knows how many Bradley Mannings and Edward Snowdens have access to this stuff. And if it's sitting there on the table, they can get access to it. That's not really secrecy from a lot of people. It's just some national security state that is very confusing. It seems, you know, I can't imagine that our founders, now it's true, our founders were in the 18th century and they didn't have an internet, but there was, you know, they had seen government spying on people before. There'd always been spying. I mean, certainly not with this technology, but they set up a system and they specifically included the Fourth Amendment. Now, why? What about the Fourth Amendment would concern patriotic Americans of the left and right? The Fourth Amendment, tell us, if you would, what that is. Not everybody is familiar with the Bill of Rights.
Well, I'll tell you, this is what's so, you know, this is what unites the right and the left,
yes,
about this. And in ways makes people on, you know, people who are like more, I don't know, politically, ideologically, like alert or attuned, kind of angry at the middle, where people just sort of shrug their shoulders and say, oh, whatever, I just got to accept it, I've got nothing to hide, you know, blah, blah, blah. The thing about the Fourth Amendment was it emerged, okay, when you go back to the reasons for the Revolutionary War, one of the biggest grievances that the American colonies was that Great Britain was, it wasn't just that they were quartering soldiers in people's homes, which became one amendment that people generally ignore. They also were conducting what the colonists considered to be, you know, overbearing and overreaching, you know, searches in their homes,
right,
and seizures of property.
Right.
And there was no judicial recourse. So that led to, you know, the creation of, you know, the Bill of Rights, where there is a constitutional amendment. You know, it's completely ignored today. I think it's the third, you know, about not quartering soldiers in people's homes. And then the fourth was search and seizure. And then after that comes, you know, the trial by jury. And the series of amendments that add up to the judicial process as we sort of know and expect and just assume that it is today.
And the fourth.
So this is what unites, you know, this is what
yes.
unites the, you know, the, you know, the left and the right, because you have a convergence of either respect for like constitutionally original principles and on, you know, perhaps on the right. And on the left, you know, what you would, you know, the, you know, civil libertarians. And I'll tell you something, you know, the ACLU's roots and their very, very hard line that they take on things like the First Amendment, you know, to the point where they, you know, oppose just about every campaign finance reform comes because they don't trust that government, you know, won't overreach. And they look to what happened in Europe in World War II with Nazi Germany and the way they sort of had an endless, you know, parade of decrees that removed, you know, the most minute, you know, civil liberties from people. Oh, you can't, you know, Jews can't go to restaurants, they can't go to parks, they can't ride on bicycles, they can't own phones, they have to register their businesses, their thises, their thats, you know, and you know, so the, you know, the people of a certain, you know, age who, you know, work, you know, in that community, you know, as lawyers and advocates, they have that history on the left. And on the right, you have people who, you know, who remember that, you know, there was this colonial history. There was a reason to break away from Great Britain. There was this history of overreach and a lack of any kind of individual rights to push back against, you know, a different police state. And that's kind of, you know, what animates some of the pushback in Congress today. But I'll tell you, there's a really key distinction that people are not getting. Those bills in Congress would require the NSA to disclose their activities, but they won't stop those activities.
Hmm. So the Amash Amendment was just calling them then to disclose their activities, but not in any way stop it?
Yeah, it's wow. Disclosure.
Not very much.
So check it out. I mean, you know, right now the House is, you know, is hurtling towards, you know, a growing federal budget, you know, smash up. One of the budget bills they have not yet passed is the intelligence appropriation for next year's federal fiscal year starting October 1st. There is no talk anywhere about discontinuing, you know, the blank check, you know, for these intelligence agencies. None. You know, there's just talk about fighting over, like, well, maybe we're going to, like, disclose a little bit.
Right.
And you know, and if you look at, like, what the NSA has, their misstatements in Congress, you know, they just talk about the most narrow, minute programs, and, you know, and then they lie. Oh, no, we're not spying on emails. Oh, we're not doing this, you know, or, oh, FISA is transparent, but, you know, the courts are, you know.
But a lot of it is, in fact, shown to be flat out lies. They do it. They have access to emails. They have access to phone numbers. And you're right, to merely say what they're doing. Boy, that's a very, very small half of a baby step, if that.
I'll tell you something. You know, it sounds really harsh. It sounds really shrill. Like, you know, here we are talking on the radio saying, oh, the government's lying.
Well,
ProPublica.org, which is another very respected news site, you know, they co-publish with the New York Times. They put together a video montage where they basically show six recent lies about domestic spying. They have the head of the NSA saying we're not spying on Americans, you know, testifying in Congress. Then, of course, we find out it's not true.
Right.
They say that they're only collecting data from bad guys. Well, then, no, that's not true. They ask, does the NSA keep data on U.S. citizens? They say no. We find out it's not true.
Right. They do.
Then they compare it to how it's no different from a local grand jury. Well, you know, grand juries don't have supercomputers. You know, and then you have the president saying the FISA court is transparent. Well, it's not. And then it goes on and on and on.
Yeah, government lying to its people. And if you just tuned in, our guest today on the Burt Cohen Show is Stephen Rosenfeld, who covers democracy issues for Alternate, author of Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting, which came out in 2008. And people seem to have taken heed on that. And we're talking about the NSA situation and how different it is from what was first revealed and how it really is, in so many ways, a violation of the Fourth Amendment, which is our protection against illegal search and seizure. We have laws to protect us citizens from illegal search and seizure. These people, unlike many different legal proceedings, there are no real laws covering it. There's no guidelines on it, and there can be really, through the Internet, illegal search and seizure of information. And a lot of people are concerned about that. And what to do about it now? That's interesting that the very controversial Amash Amendment really didn't do very much except for requiring the NSA to say what the heck it's up to. And you're saying similar information to what a researcher of the National Academy of Sciences, Herb Lin, he has written that budgets must be used to change behavior. That, you know, in our own homes, we use budget to change behavior. Herb Lin says, quote, the incentives to classify information are many, and the incentives to refrain from classifying it are few. Classifying information doesn't incur any monetary cost for the classifier, and any economist will tell you that a free good will be overused. Any reaction to that?
Well, he's right. Now, you know, this is he's correct. He quite simply is correct.
Yeah.
And so again, I keep mentioning this book because, you know, it's easy for me to just talk here and people think, oh, God, he's so shrill. Oh, he's so alarmist. Well, you know, the sources for what I'm, I write analysis pieces. They're like commentaries. But, you know, they're based on research. They're not just based on, you know, beliefs.
Opinions.
And
yeah.
I go back to the work done by some of the best investigative reporters that I know. And I think about, on this topic, it's Dana Priest and William Arkin of the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, you know, a flaming liberal publication by any stretch.
Right.
And, you know, what they say, and this is so interesting, is, you know, they say that all of this started in the scramble after 9/11 by Congress and the White House to do anything and everything. And they say that what happened then was the Congress gave, they gave bottomless checks to the security agencies to go after bin Laden. And they say that, you know, that then President George W. Bush authorized the largest, you know, covert covert action, you know, mission for the CIA in its entire history. And then, you know, and what happened there was the seeds of what we're talking about today with this national security state, you know, that's when they first were planted. And what's happened since then is just it's expanded exponentially. And what's happened as what you're saying is most of it is classified, which means that if you don't have the clearance, you can't talk about it. But these days there's close to a million people working, you know, for this system, you know, across the country with these secret and top secret clearances. And we're only a country of, what, 350 million people?
Yeah.
But one out of every 350 or 400 people, works and somehow has access, you know, to parts of all this information and, you know, and it's, you know, they're supporting their families doing this stuff.
Sure. And, you know, we question what would be the real purpose of this. And we referred to, things like Facebook that uses the information for marketing purposes. Quite legitimate. We know when we sign up for Facebook, guess what? They're going to take our information and market stuff to us. Yeah, that's fine. We know that we're doing that. What I find fascinating here is, you know, the government says no, that these invasive tools will not be used for political or commercial goals. But when you think about it, and all the a million or so people who have access to this stuff, you know, people like money. And as someone wrote, for them not to use this information, compared it to a hungry man saying, no, I don't want a free cheeseburger. Being able to reward corporate donors and supporters with ironclad intelligence on competitors and on potential buyers, both internationally and domestically, that could easily be worth billions of dollars. Now, maybe this is paranoid. I'm not suggesting this. People have written about this. You know, there's a possibility. I mean, this is a powerful tool. Go ahead.
Actually, people have written about that. One of the reasons that the Europeans are so, you know, teed off about.
Oh, they're furious, yes.
Is that some of these surveillance techniques have been used, you know, around the perimeters of these economic summits so that when the United States and their negotiators go in, you know, they've set up free Wi-Fi zones and they basically see what people are saying to each other so they can, you know, have stronger negotiating positions.
Yeah.
That's been in the Times.
That's amazing. It is just, and this whole key score thing, you know, and just how powerful that is. It's this easily accessible program. What if people want to go look at the X key score information? What's the link that I know you provided me? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, well, it's on. You know, it's the New York. You know, what's his name? Charlie Savage wrote the story. You know, put it up by the New York Times. It's, you know, it's in my story at Alternet. You know, it's available in the UK Guardian stories. You know, it's not, think about this. They can search your friend list. They can, you know, they can find out, they can go in through, you know, text, friend lists, you know, email, you know, it's not just the emails themselves, but the logins, the addresses, who else they're sent to. It's, you know, everything that we do that involves, you know, sending something out electronically is fair game.
And it's not like, I mean, that's the thing here that we're really focusing on is how there has been, as you said, the metadata explanation has been unmasked as a meta lie.
Metadata means, you know, what the people said was, oh, well, look, we're just looking at what's like, the first page of your phone bill. We're looking at who you called. We're not looking at, like, what you said in those calls.
Right.
Well, and some people were saying, well, you know, that still lets you know, like, who I'm talking to. That's not exactly, you know, such little information.
Right.
But it's not true. There's other programs, like the one we're talking about here, this X-Keyscore thing, that absolutely lets you take a look at the content of communications. And it's not just phone. You know, it's emails, it's text. It's all kinds of stuff.
And it's, phone numbers, obviously, the webmail and chat activity, buddy list, specific cookies that get used, certain words. If you say certain words, they're going to come up. Whether or not, you know, you have anything to do with terrorism, there's huge, huge tools that who has control over it, you know, who does this national security state, which is, you know, come into being under Bush and now Obama, it's bipartisan, who does the national security state answer to?
This is what is so astounding, and actually I kind of wrote a little bit about it. This piece is probably going to come out tomorrow on Alternet. The answer is there is no answer to that. That's what's so astounding about this. You have what Dana Priest and William Arkin write is that, you know, their sources tell them that, you know, that they get taken into these rooms, you know, in the Pentagon and other places where they get the briefing, you know, they're told you can't take any notes, you can just sit here and listen. And all of a sudden, you know, 3 hours into it, their brains turn to mush. And because there are so many programs, nobody can hold them all. And the notion that there's oversight there is no oversight of the thing en masse as an organism. Yeah, maybe there are pieces of it. So for example, you here's how you hear about collisions between these kinds of programs. You will read stories about the military in Afghanistan going out and grabbing somebody, you know, some branch of the military, who one of the spy agencies, you know, is using as a source. But the spy agency doesn't want to identify that or tell the military that person, you know, is one of their, you know, their agents.
Right.
And then, the person on the ground who gets swept up on this, who's trying to, you know, help supposedly our side, is going, what? They're saying more than just what. But, you know, but this is an example of how these kinds of, these, like, all these programs, they collide. There isn't coordination. Nobody can hold it all.
Right.
And there are thousands and upon thousands, and I'm not making that number up. This comes right out of this, you know, these from the Washington Post, you know, programs and offices and subcontractors and this software tool and that software tool and we're told that, you know, all of this happens behind closed doors because it's secret and just Congress says, trust us, you know. but there is the oversight piece is completely missing. And you know, you would think that, you know, the Republicans who are so nuts about, you know, the intrusiveness of Obamacare would step back and take a look at this thing and say, are you kidding me? But instead, you know, it's all like, well, you know, we have to line up behind the flag. And,
right.
And it's completely upside down.
It is. And one has to wonder if the Fourth Amendment protection against illegal searches and seizures is a nice memory. I certainly hope not. And, you know, we can, our members of Congress do listen to us, people, believe it or not. If they hear from you, they're going to listen. They're going to sit up and pay attention to you. And, you know, fear is being manipulated, absolutely manipulated here to create this big monolithic surveillance state, a national security state, which is not like any America that I grew up in. And it seems to have very little, if anything, to do with actually fighting terrorism. Our guest today has been Steve Rosenfeld. What's the best way to track your writing, Stephen? Just go to Alternet?
Well, it's at alternet.org, A-L-T-E-R-N-E-T, and you can just, you'll see a story there in the queue, and you can just click on my name, and you'll see the list of all the different pieces. That's probably the most efficient way to do it. That's how I do it.
Well, thank you very much, and, you know, a lot of us get pretty angry at being lied to. Thanks very much, Steve Rosenfeld, for looking at what is behind some of the lies. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And it's about lies and about truth and getting to that truth and stopping lies. Let's go!